It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We continue our Friday Week in Review show with politics. And we begin at the national level, which Linda Kenyon covers for Illinois Public Media. Hello, Linda. Good to talk with you again.
Hello, Brian. Good to be back.
So this week, former President Trump threatened Illinois-based John Deere Company with some tariffs. We actually have a little tape of this. Let's listen to what he said.
I just noticed behind me John Deere tractors. I know a lot about John Deere. I love the company. But as you know, they've announced a few days ago that they're going to move a lot of their manufacturing business to Mexico. I'm just notifying John Deere right now. If you do that, we're putting a 200% tariff on everything that you want to sell into the United States.
All right. Now, as you know, Deere is one of the marquee companies, especially in downstate Illinois. So, Linda, what is the former president talking about here? And I guess maybe you can put it in the context of his broader economic message.
Well, those comments were made in Western Pennsylvania. And as you know, Pennsylvania is a battleground state in this election. The former president needs to win Pennsylvania in order to help him return to the White House. So to say something like that to working people in Pennsylvania was really not a very welcome statement, but it does fall within the larger context of the president's tariff proposals, which is to impose tariffs on every single product that comes into the United States from outside of the United States. And that would include, in this case, John Deere products that are made in Mexico instead of in the United States. Now, the former president says that this larger tariff proposal will bring in tremendous amount of revenue into the United States. The Democratic candidate, the Vice President Kamala Harris, says these tariffs amount to an across-the-board increase in everything American people buy, everything they consume that comes into the United States, and will amount to about $4,000 per middle-class family or per individual in terms of raising prices for the working Americans. And she says it's a loser for the American people. And so there is a fundamental disagreement about what tariffs will do. Donald Trump very much in favor of increasing tariffs and expanding tariffs across the board. Kamala Harris not in favor of the former president's tariff proposal, saying it will increase prices across the board.
I should just mention, for its part, Deere issued a statement basically saying it is committed to U.S. manufacturing and has invested $2 billion in that direction in the last 5 years or so. All right, let's talk about something else that happened in national politics this week, and that is our Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who, of course, is chair of the Judiciary Committee, held another hearing this week. This one was on the U.S. Supreme Court's big presidential immunity decision this past summer. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the Supreme Court's ruling was a 6-3 immunity ruling. It came in July. And basically what it said was that presidents are immune from prosecution for any official acts that they commit while in office. However, it did not define what an official act would be, leaving that up to lower courts, of course, to decide on a case-by-case basis. Now, Democrats have widely panned that decision, saying that if presidents are immune from prosecution, that puts them above the law. Nobody is above the law in the United States of America. And that also means that a president such as Donald Trump, for example, could do basically anything and call it an official act, right down to declaring himself a president for life, for example. Or, as Justice Sotomayor said during the ruling, that a president could essentially order the FBI, for example, to kill someone, and that would be immune from prosecution. So it has been a very controversial ruling. Democrats have widely panned it, and Republicans have said it was simply a ruling that would prevent presidents from being paralyzed in office over fear of prosecution for almost everything that they do. So this hearing in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee was a rather heated hearing, going through those particular talking points with the chairman, Senator Dick Durbin getting into some arguments with Senator Lindsey Graham, Graham being the top Republican on the committee. He told his colleagues that he objected to the hearing at all. He was saying that it was just the title of the hearing alone was loaded and uncalled for, and that it was not a fair hearing. He said it was a politically motivated hearing.
Well, that is something we will continue to follow. I should mention that Special Counsel Jack Smith, who is prosecuting both the documents, classified documents case against former President Trump and the January 6th case, filed a sealed legal brief, I guess, yesterday, Thursday, as we are going to air on Friday. And we will wait to see whether that's released before the election. He did have to slim down his case against the former president in the wake of that decision. Well, let's talk about something else that we have talked about a lot in our time together on these Friday conversations over the last year and a half, and that is the possibility of a government shutdown. We saw Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson this week going sort of crying uncle with his own caucus and trying to bring in Democrats to avert a shutdown. How did that play out?
Well, it played out in such a fashion that there will be no government shutdown. So that's a sigh of relief for a lot of lawmakers on Capitol Hill who knew that a shutdown would really impact them very badly ahead of an election. They also are also being very cautious because this new continuing resolution, which continues funding at current levels, does have to expire at some point. And the expiration date on that now is December 20th. So if you do the math, that's 5 days before Christmas. And lawmakers hate to be in town for Christmas. They hate to have a shutdown for the holidays. But I must tell you, after many years of covering Capitol Hill and the White House and just being in Washington in general, where the percentage of federal workers is quite large, it looks like Christmas. Every single year they talk about a government shutdown. And everybody's on Capitol Hill burning the midnight oil, working round the clock, trying to avert a shutdown. And it's basically, Merry Christmas, you're laid off.
No way to run a railroad or a national government, maybe. All right, last thing I want to ask you about, and briefly, we have a big debate next week. I'm not sure that it's really going to matter all that much in the grand scheme of this very tight campaign for president, but we will see Ohio Senator J.D. Vance and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz debating. What are you going to be watching for coming out of that event on CBS?
Yes, it will be on CBS, and it is probably going to be the only debate between the vice presidential candidates that we will see in this election cycle, and it will probably be the only debate, at all, because we're not going to see, quite frankly, it's highly unlikely that we will see another presidential debate. This debate will be very closely watched, in part due to the fact that J.D. Vance has created a bit of a headache for Republican handlers in the Trump-Vance campaign because of his comment about Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, eating cats and dogs, and later saying basically that he kind of knew it wasn't true, but he still seems to double down on that. And former President Trump doing the same thing. There's been huge outcry on that. He has also said many controversial comments about women, about abortion, about his views on family in general. And Tim Walz has been viewed as a very popular candidate who is a very plain-spoken, very down-to-earth person who has been basically tasked with refuting pretty much everything that J.D. Vance says, and he's been very good at it so far, and he's been widely embraced, certainly by supporters on the Democratic side of the aisle. So this will be a contrast in personality. This will be a study of a contrast in terms of position, in terms of political points. And it will probably be an opportunity to point out many of the discrepancies that have been said on both sides of the aisle, but in particular, J.D. Vance and his opinion before he was the vice president, presidential nominee for the GOP, his opinion about Donald Trump In the past, he has not had very favorable things to say about him, but he seems to have changed quite a bit, enough, of course, to have been named as the vice presidential candidate on the Trump ticket.
Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye on that. Of course, Tim Walz has tried to soften the ground a little by saying he's not a very good debater. Then again, NBC had a survey that came out this week I saw where he was actually had a higher positivity rating than Taylor Swift. So we'll see how that plays out. Linda Kenyon, have a great weekend. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And if you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We're in the middle of our Friday politics roundtable. Illinois counties keep a lot of information on the people who live or have lived in those areas. And for a while, millions of those records were available on the internet for anybody to access. Sensitive personal information in more than a dozen counties around the state seems to have been affected. Joining us now to talk about that is Andrew Adams, who is a state government reporter based in Chicago. He wrote about all of this for Capital News Illinois. Andrew, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So what sort of records are we talking about here?
These records included really all types of files and documents that a county clerk might have. So there were death certificates, voter rolls, voter registration documents, voter registration applications, that kind of thing.
And what sort of information? Like social security numbers in there, birth dates, obviously, if they have birth certificates and death dates?
Yeah. Social security numbers, locations, so addresses, full names, dates of birth. The person who found this, a security researcher named Jeremiah Fowler, said that it was everything one might need to commit identity theft.
So we don't have a list of all the counties affected by this, but I understand they're all over Illinois. Is there a common thread that connects these counties?
Yes. So the issue was traced to a company, an IT vendor that's pretty popular in Illinois and does a lot of elections related work called Platinum, Platinum Technology Resource. They're based up in Batavia. And, you know, when they were setting up these databases, they misconfigured, or I should say they allegedly misconfigured. They are a little cagey about what exactly happened, according to them. But the security researcher who identified this issue, he said that they misconfigured this database so that it was available basically without a password.
Without a password. All right. So what indication do we have of how the counties and this company Platinum have been dealing with this since this issue emerged?
Well, the kind of standard operating procedure for this type of security research, you know, where an outside researcher will find a vulnerability and tell the, you know, company or person responsible for it, is to contact them before going public, before telling anyone else, you know, provide some evidence and take the minimum amount of information you need to show that the security vulnerability exists. And that's what happened here. The researcher saw all of this data. He contacted some folks that work with Platinum and said, hey, I think you have kind of a serious issue here. You might want to take a look at how these were set up. And Platinum did. So this situation was resolved before anyone else outside of this researcher learned about it. The databases have been reconfigured and this data is no longer available, you know, to peruse just with anyone on the internet.
So that's an important point. Go ahead. Yeah. I would say it's point of clarification that this was not like he found these databases on the dark web and, you know, where people had been trading this information or anything like that.
Exactly. This is, you know, for lack of a better frame, this is kind of how it's supposed to work when there's a problem. This is the system working the way that it should of, you know, someone with good intentions finding this information and helping to get it secured and locked down before, you know, before, like you said, it might pop up on the dark web and suddenly you're selling, you know, millions of documents related to voting to whoever has the most money.
Well, let's be clear about that then. So is this expected to have any effect on the upcoming elections?
No. It's not quite the kinds of information that would be really pointedly harmful for elections. It's more so a risk towards identity theft. And I spoke to a couple election, experts, and they told me that, given the type of information, given that it's resolved and kind of the way in which it was resolved, this is not expected to have any effect on the election. It was more so concerns about identity theft and data security in general.
And I guess, though, there is this question lingering out there where any sort of missteps by election officials, county clerks in Illinois, does give credence or is fuel to the fire for the conspiracy theorists, right? Is that a concern here?
That's absolutely a concern. And particularly, I talked to, more than a dozen county clerks, for my reporting on this. And I found that a lot of them, one of their first reactions was saying, I really wish this hadn't happened right now. Maybe at a different time, it would be a little less stressful for me in my office. And this is particularly true for some of the smaller counties, some of the downstate counties that, that I believe were affected by this. And, who told me that, they are strapped as it is. They are struggling. They don't have a lot of staff and they have a pretty, they have some members of their community that, might be lean towards some of those conspiracy theories about elections. And they are trying very hard to reconnect with those people and say, our elections are secure.
Yeah.
You can trust us.
The information is not relevant and fortunately doesn't seem to have gotten out. All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Andrew Adams, state government reporter with Capital News Illinois. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks, Brian.
More to come after a short break. You're listening to The 21st Show. Please stay with us.